Shame there's not more people here, isn't it?
No, it is enough.
Is it? Well, that's good then, if you want to do that. Yeah. Nice venue, isn't it?
Yeah, I haven't been here for years and years.
Do you remember that? Did you ever drink in Reading?
No.
No, this is the site where the old Bulls used to be.
No, I don't really know Reading at all, actually.
No?
No.
It used to be like the main pub, but this is now. Okay. Did you ever drink in the Bulls Head, Bill?
I didn't really drink in
Bulls. Yeah, it used to be here, the old pub. Yeah.
There was one rock pub here,
and there was a lot of the right. Okay, then. Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, everyone, for staying. And what we do is we've run out of milk, so if you want a drink of water, just go out and help yourselves. But we're just going to go straight from your vet into Tim, so that way some people got a bit of distance to travel, haven't they, to get home. And all right, vet?
Oh, yeah, thank you.
It's all yours.
Really? Oh, my God. I'm very nervous. My name's Yvette and I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And I feel intimidated by old timers. And Frank's was such a good chair, and I was thinking, oh God, now I've got to go and talk. Yeah, so my name's Yvette and I'm an alcoholic. And I was just, if I could sort of capture my thoughts that I've had for the last 24 hours, I thought it would be a wicked chair. fucking hell. I've been talking in the shower, in the kitchen. It's like, that's really good and that's really good. You know, and one of the first things I actually thought was when I was asked to do this chair was, God, I've got to act grown up. You know, 30 years. I was 30 years, you know, on September the 12th, which I'm now changing to September the 11th, yeah. 1987. That's official. That's when I last took my job, only because Tim is the same day, and I've held that resentment for 30 years. And every time he's in a meeting, I think, shit, he's here again, you know? But isn't that amazing? 30 years. I was just talking to Lynn. I almost don't feel like I qualify for this seat. I still feel too young, you know? You know, I was always called young Yvette, and I'm probably not young Yvette anymore. But, 30 years, you know, and that impresses me, you know, because if it don't anybody else, it impresses me, you know, because, I remember where I was, you know, on that night, you know, September the 11th. September the 11th, 1987, you know, a hopeless case. And I always sort of say that I don't want to start at the beginning, because we're all here because we've got a horror story, you know, and if I start at the beginning, I never get to the end. And for me, that's the good bit, you know, because I love, love, love being sober. I love my life today. And as I say, I've done a lot of reflection, you know, and I think I was kind of thinking, you know, what is an old timer? You know, I've just been around a long time, and you know, I don't know about cross sharing, but I'm sorry, I'm going to sort of refer to something somebody said. You know, it's just I've got it wrong lots of times in recovery. You know, and I look at my life today, and I think I'm glad I got it wrong on a lot of occasions. You know, because it's been like a really rich tapestry. You know, where, you know, with time, I can look back. I have the experience of looking back, but you don't have the experience of looking forward, you know, if that makes any sense. You know, when I was sort of first around, people would say, well, this will happen. I didn't know that. I had to have trust and faith, you know, but having made the mistakes and, you know, when I look at the path that I've been on and the route that recovery has taken me, I can look back and think, yeah, I can see where I went wrong, you know, and learn from it. You know, they say experience is good if you can learn from it, you know, and don't make those mistakes again. Also, I was sort of reading up, you know, I was reading an article on long-term sobriety recently, and somebody who left the rooms and decided that they weren't defective anymore. And I thought, what a shame. You know, what a shame. because it's no different for me today. I still, and I guess that's the key for me, I've just kept doing the same thing, but I have sort of matured, a bit like an old bit of cheese, really. You know, I feel better, my life is better and richer. But fundamentally, it's it's back to basics all the time, you know. And I thought about it, and I thought this person who was talking about having left the meetings because they didn't feel they were defective anymore, I thought they're missing out on a really good part, and that's the giving back, you know. It's not just about taking for me, you know. I, you know, the 12 steps has taught me that, to give back a little bit, you know, a lot, you know, to try and give back, you know. And there's so many things, you know, I could talk about, or we'll sort of go on to talk a little about, you know, a bit about, rather, you know, about my recovery. But I also don't want to forget where I came from. So and the longer that sort of goes by, you know, if I keep it fresh, and, you know, I love listening to newcomers, and I've learnt to be tolerant and patient, and just like they have when I start talking, or when I hear some old timers talking, and I think, oh, they're just an old dinosaur. Do you know what I mean? I'm one of those old dinosaurs too, you know. And I will say, whatever I say, I speak for myself. When people used to say that, I used to think, what are they talking about? They only talk for them. But I completely get that now, you know, because it is only my experience. And if I say something, it's not to offend anybody or to be righteous. It's just my experience, you know. So, you know, 30 years ago, just over, I only actually drank for 10 years, really. And it was a horror story. I came in full of blame and wanted revenge, you know. And you know, I had this awful life where I'd been brought up in an alcoholic family, and I was hopeless, and I was on my pity pot, and I was a young girl sort of going nowhere really fast, really. And lots happened in that 10 years. I always sort of explain it a bit like being vacuum packed, you know, and I'm very, very grateful for that today. You know, I lost every job I had. I was kicked out of my family home. I came into recovery on the back of an Old Bailey trial where I'd been nearly murdered. You know, it took me to dangerous, dark places. I wasn't a social drinker in a pub. You know, I'd very, at a very young age, discovered that you could buy a bottle and it had 32 shots in it, and it only cost so many pounds. And in a pub, that was going to cost me a lot more. So I'd started drinking secretly. I'd also become a binge drinker. And I'm grateful for that as well, because I feel that that sort of got me to my rock bottom quicker, because every time I went back to it, it was like 10 times worse than the last time. But I also had spells of being sober or dry, you know, and I liked it. I didn't like drinking, really. You know, I hear people say, you know, they drank for oblivion and that was their main goal. It wasn't, I don't think, my main goal, because I hated being out of control. And I always sort of say that if I could have still kept the feeling that I got from after 3 or 4, I'd still be out there doing it, because that was magic. That was like nirvana. It was just, it was just like the lights come on. My body felt warm. I could talk. I felt witty. I felt pretty. I didn't feel inadequate. You know, it just gave me everything that I was looking for in life, and it made me not really care, you know. But as we know, you know, it's a progressive illness, and it wasn't long before I'd stopped drinking in pubs and drinking socially and drank in isolation and started to lose jobs and friends and, you know, everything that I thought drink gave me. And I'm going to kind of skip a little bit now to the night that I took my last drink. So I had just got married. I'd married a man who had a nice flat on the river. That was all I was interested in Bolter's Lock. It was a nice posh place. And then I turned up. He had a bit of money in the bank. I thought, that's nice. I didn't have anything. He was 20 years older than me. I thought, I can cope with that. He had a bald head, which I didn't like. That's the truth. I was 19. I thought, I'm going to have to cope with this somehow. You know, I used to wheedle my way into people's lives and make them like me. I was really good at charming. You know, I think a lot of alcoholics can be like that. I was very, very good, you know, very, very manipulative. And this man sort of fell in love with me, and we ended up getting married, and he was Jewish, I was Catholic. you know, and then I took my last drink. So my getting sober and my marriage all sort of happened within 2 months of each other. I'd been away for 3 weeks on honeymoon. He'd also seen the worst of my drinking, this man, and that man is my ex-husband today and one of my closest friends, you know, the father of my two sobriety children. But anyway, this night on the 12th or 11th of September, I'd been drinking for 7 weeks. And when I say a last drink, that's how long my drink was, 7 weeks. It wasn't like a drink, you know. And I ended up on the landing of this home that we just bought. And I had phoned AA. I remember sort of sinking to my knees in the living room and thinking, there's nothing else left, you know. I had tried in those 10 years of drinking everything to stop, and I couldn't. And I remember it was torrential rain. And he'd thrown a duvet over me. I stunk of booze, like you do. It was coming out my pores. And I couldn't open my eyes. And, you know, I'd rapidly drunk after I'd made this phone call and ended up there, and he just left me there. And anyway, this couple came out to see me. And I'll never forget it, and I always like to share it. So there I was laying there, stinking of booze, and I could hear this woman, and I could hear this man's voice downstairs, and this woman, and I thought, if I just keep my eyes shut, she can't look at me, do you know what I mean, the duvet. And I was like, I was aware she was there, and I can remember every footstep she took up the stairs, and I could feel her kneel down next to me and talk to me. I can't remember what she said, but this is the bit I will never forget. She kissed me on the top of my head, and she said, it's going to be okay. And that was, to me, like the first, when I look back, one of the first acts of kindness, you know, that I have, people have continued to show me in recovery. And those are the sort of acts that I try and give back today. This was a complete stranger. She came out on a rainy night, you know, she was just like an angel that had been sent, you know. And when I look back to that night, I do believe in God today. I haven't always believed in it is of my understanding today, and it is what it is, and I believe in God today, you know. But when I look back to that night, I was a hopeless case. I had been in mental institutions on numerous occasions. I had tried psychotherapy, psychiatrists. I remember trying hypnotherapy. I tried everything to stop drinking because I hated what it was doing to me, and I could not stop. You know, I ended up in police cells and just terrible places, and couldn't stop. And I used to know that when I took a drink, all bets were off. So something happened to me that night. I do believe that I found God, or God found me, because I hadn't ended up anywhere like that, you know. And I previously, I'd always needed to be taken away from the alcohol to get sober. And yet, the beginning of my recovery, I wasn't taken anywhere. I was literally, actually, this woman did take me into her home for 3 or 4 nights, and she looked after me. She gave me water and ham sandwiches with mustard, which today always sort of take me back to that time. And I could hear the man downstairs saying, "This kid hasn't got a snowball's chance in hell." You know, and that was me. And then I look like all these years down the line, and I'm happy. I have a happiness beyond any words I can describe. You know, I have a very rich life, and I don't mean that materialistically. I've grown up, you know, so many things have happened, but that's where my drink took me, you know. And in those 10 years, as I say, sort of everything happened, really. I know I was always an addict. I always describe my drinking and my life as, for those of us of our age, you used to have those whack attack games, you know, where you'd bang the things down with a hammer and they would pop up and you try and bang them all down. Well, my life was kind of like that, because it was either drink, it was food, it was smoking. I used to smoke 80 cigarettes a day. I mean, I don't know how I got the time. Literally, you know, I'd literally be just smoke. you know, I was also, when I went into that hospital, the mental asylum, and it was an asylum, it wasn't a nice little treatment centre, it was a mental asylum with locked wards and bars at the window. It was Stone in Aylesbury, who some of you may remember, you know, and so it was either drink, it was cigarettes, it was food, it was exercise, you know, and I've always been a person of extremes, you know. So when one thing banged down, another would come up, and that was kind of the story of my life, you know. It was just trying to keep all those bloody things down, you know. But in recovery, it's sort of been, for me, getting sober has been the most important thing, because now I'm sober, I can deal with anything and everything, you know. So it's been quite a long, sort of painful journey, you know. And so this lady, Marianne, who 12-stepped me, she started taking me to meetings after I kind of woke up, really, sobered up a little bit. And actually, I just want to talk a little bit more about my drinking, because I have got quite a lot of time. you know, as I say, you know, I knew I was an addict, you know. My first job was in a dry cleaner's. It was fantastic for an addict. Yeah, all those perchloroethylene fumes. You know, I used to take all the clothes out of the machine early and get high on all the... amazing. Then I used to go and get a drink in the pub, and I'd come back, I'd be high as a kite, you know. I used to do the drape finishing of the curtains, so I had my own little... I called it my bar area. I had all the curtains hanging, perfect. And then I'd have the water cooler at the end, and I'd go and I'd pretend to get a glass of water, and then I had my drinks underneath, and... You know, I'd be topping up. I loved booze. I loved feeling happy. It made me feel happy, you know, and it made me sort of be able to do everything, you know. But, yeah, but, you know, I lost everything. I was insanely jealous. I was insecure. I always felt the world owed me a living. You know, I was full of self-righteousness. I was full of self-pity. All that negative stuff, you know, and... So it was pour me, pour me, pour me a drink, you know, and then I'd start drinking. I started hiding the drink, you know, which is, I was in a family of alcoholics. You'd get lucky. There was three of us hiding booze around the house. You know, so I'm sure I didn't hide it there, but, you know, and it was just insane, you know. I'd started morning drinking because I would have that hair, the hair of the dog, because... I would say to myself, I'm not going to drink tomorrow, you know, and then I'd get to work and, you know, by 10 o'clock I can remember sitting in this canteen of this place where I worked at one point and thinking, I can't get to the door, I can't, because I'd started really shaking, you know, and so I started to have the morning drink, you know, and my drinking just progressed, and then it kind of crashed, you know, my tolerance crashed. You know, I lost jobs, I was sacked, I was full of shame. You know, the night I was 12-stepped, I remember, like I said, I didn't want her to look at me because I just felt disgust and shame. And I thought, no one was as bad as me, you know. So it was kind of a miracle. I believe I found God on the 11th of September, you know. And I started to slowly go to meetings. And for 7 years, I didn't really go through the steps. And my recovery has sort of been like, I've had hundreds... of sort of light bulb moments and learning moments. You know, I was still dishonest when I got sober, you know, and I can remember just, it felt safe to just sit in the meetings back then. And the meetings, we were just saying, were all an hour and a half long, you know, and which I kind of laugh at today, you know, because I was sharing with Lynn, you know, how they've changed now. A lot of them are just an hour long and you're only allowed to talk for 10 minutes. And I think that's an insult to ask an alcoholic to only talk about themselves for 10 minutes. I really do. And how can I just tell you everything I want to tell you in 10 minutes, you know? I've never known anybody read a chair. I read my first chair. I had it on, like, A4, and they must have thought, Jesus Christ. It took me an hour. You know, now, if I'm honest, I sit and meet and think, oh, God, they're going on a bit. I know, this is an honest programme. You know, so I still have those thoughts today. I have to pull myself up, you know. So now I've lost my train of thought. Anyway, where was I? Yes, so I've forgotten what I was saying now. So anyway, yes, I started coming to meetings and sort of sitting in and listening and made lots of mistakes. That's what I was saying. I always say for like 6 or 7 years, yeah, my light bulb moments, I didn't have... I didn't go through the steps. I used to sit in meetings and pretend I'd done them. I'd pretend I'd done them. You know, but then I developed that conscience, you know. And it's a really uncomfortable feeling, that, you know, when you start getting one. And I can remember lots of little things. I can remember sitting in meetings and cussing my husband. You know, and being one person in the meeting and then going back and being somebody completely different. Bitch from hell. You know, you never thought I'd stop drinking. I took everything out on him. I was full of anger, full of rage, full of blame. You know, I didn't like it. It started to feel really uncomfortable. And I had this sponsor. I used to phone her up every day and moan about him. I'll never forget her. She said, she put the phone down on me, you know, how dare she, one day. And she said, phone me back when you've got something good to say. I was like, oh! You know, how dare she talk to me like that? But she was right. She was, and this is what I can say. I can look back and think, I've had to say that to people. And she was absolutely right, because all I did, I was the most negative, miserable, oh, I must have been a nightmare, you know? And I can remember her telling me that and thinking, Yvette, she's absolutely right. And I had to change my thinking. You know, it's all about change. You know, I was never going to move forward if I lived in this. You know, they say negativity breeds negativity, positivity breeds positivity. And going through the steps and getting honest and all of that, you know, I have to be honest, rigorously honest, you know, just gave me a freedom, you know. And so I started to just fake it to make it. You know, I'd just be nice to him. I was still married to the man. You know, I should have been nice to him. You know, I'd got two children, but. Yes, I started to be nice to him. I started to be nice, say, you know, nice things to him, say thank you, you know, and it was amazing. My recovery really has been like a million little things that have happened. You know, I had these two beautiful children, and I love what the previous speaker said because it stirred so much in me. So I have two children. I had two boys, one is 29, one is 26. Toby was born with autism and Asperger's. I didn't know that at the time. He was a child that was different, you know, and I was like, fucking great. You know, that was the truth. Great. Poor me. Poor me. I've got this child, you know, who's different. And another light bulb moment for me that I want to share with you was we were at a sports day one day, and Toby used to have to wear a little special hat because he was always falling over and hurting his head, and he had Piaggio boots and little calipers on. And he was running this obstacle course race, and I knew he'd come last because he always came last. Poor me, you know. And it was a beautiful sunny day, and I'll just never forget it. I was crying because I knew he'd come last. All the mothers were clapping, like clapping. And I suddenly thought, I can't explain it. I suddenly thought, Yvette, you think it's all about you. This child, who's now 26, has taught me so much. It was just one of those many moments out of hundreds. I thought, you're selfish sod. You think it's all about you. You don't look at the bigger picture. And he has continued to teach me and show me. And he's 26 now. He loves to do activities, and I try and give him as much time as I can. I'm very fortunate. He's verbal and he's very active, you know. And my children have taught me so much with the 12 steps, you know, having to wait and be patient and not force my opinions on people or want people to do things my way because I know best, you know. He only said to me last week, you know, Mum, I think I'd like to meet people in a group that are like me. And I thought, thank the Lord. You know, I do pray in the morning. I do get down on my knees. For me, it's an act of humility, and I pray for guidance and direction. And that's come over the years. That wasn't... Do you know, I used to say I prayed. I didn't get on my knees, you know. But I do today, and I pray for guidance and direction, you know. And I have an amazing relationship with both my boys now, and they've both taught me so much. The older one's taught me to shut my mouth a bit because he thinks he knows everything. You know, that's not good for an alcoholic because I think I know everything. But I just learn. You know, this is an amazing learning program, and I continue to learn from them, you know, and... You know, I am an ordinary housekeeper. I started out as a cleaner. I never used to want to share that. Just a cleaner. And I'm not just a cleaner today, I'm a housekeeper. I have a title. You know, and I can remember, like, AA has given me, through going through the steps, a sense of value and a sense of self-worth, which I never, ever had. I am worthy today, you know. And so I started off doing cleaning jobs and taking my children with me and earning a little bit of money. I'd gotten divorced. Kind of missed a big chunk there. You know, I'd gotten divorced. I was infamous for living in the same house with my husband and my boyfriend. I moved him in because I thought that's my answer to keeping it simple, you know. So I fell in love with a man who was an alcoholic, and I lived for years in recovery. I don't know how I'd done it. I wouldn't recommend it. With my partner and my husband in the same house and two children. And I was so angry and so unwell, I can't even begin to tell you. You know, I can be and have been a very sick alcoholic in recovery. And it was all because I didn't know how to let go. You know, I learned a lot about myself in that process. You know, I was full of fear. Full of fear. I tried to get this alcoholic sober. I know today I can't get anybody sober. Tim knew this alcoholic. He died 3 years ago. The most tragic, tragic death. You know, and I had to watch him die. It was awful, really, really painful. I've seen a lot of people die in recovery. You know, I'm very, you know, grateful. That's why I still come, you know, because you sort of see what happens to people who can stop coming. But I keep losing my train of thought. Sorry, it's because I'm quite nervous. So anyway, yes, so I was talking about all the light bulb moments and things that have happened. So, yeah, I'm just a cleaner. So another, you know, about 10 years ago, I decided I'm not just going to be just a cleaner. I'm going to join all the agencies in London, and I'm going to, you know, I have value today. And I joined all these agencies, and suddenly my ego went through the roof because it's like they want me, you know. And I ended up working, and I'm not saying this for ego because I didn't take the job, but I ended up being offered a job, and I can remember it clearly. It was with one of the top sportsmen in the world. It was paid to be part of their family. I was going to travel the world, different country every 2 weeks. He was a tennis player, is still a tennis player. And I can remember being in Wimbledon, and also my recovery has been full of humorous moments. I remember sitting with the PA and she was saying, "Now, you've got to be careful of anonymity." And I'm going, "Yeah, I know." She's going, "The paparazzi will follow you." And I'm thinking, "All right, okay, I don't want to be seen on anything." Anyway, we went down to him. But I can remember I'd fallen in love. 8 years ago, I fell in love with the man that I'm with now. And I can remember looking out over Wimbledon Common, and I've got this job on this shoulder. You travel the world. You're going to be treated first class. Good wage. My son's going to take it. I'm take it. I've met somebody I've fallen in love with. And I can remember looking out the window in Wimbledon, over Wimbledon Common, thinking, "I don't want this job. I don't want this job. One day off a week for a bit of money and to see the world. Nah." And I didn't take it. And I'm really glad I didn't take it, you know, because I've gone on to have the most amazing, beautiful relationship with a man that I'm still in love with. I adore him and he adores me. And it's a healthy, it's a wonderful relationship, you know. But it was just one of those, again, light bulb moments. I thought, I couldn't, it doesn't matter where I am in the world, I need these meetings. I need these meetings, you know, and I couldn't envisage not being able to just get to one when I want to, or picking up the phone. It was all going to be, I won't bore you with it, but it wasn't going to be possible, you know. And only a week after I turned it down, there was a picture of the then nanny in the News of the World, and I thought I could have easily. And I also know, when I was, and again, I speak from experience, I know what alcoholics can be like. Do you know what I mean? You see a picture of somebody in the paper and it's like, "Yeah, I've got a story on that one," you know, and I could see these headlines, such and such a sick alcoholic nanny, and I was like, "No way." You know, my anonymity today is precious. And I speak for myself, you won't find me on any social media. Other people's anonymity is precious to me too. I really respect it, you know. It hasn't always been like that, but that's where I am today, you know. You know, I have this partner that I'm very much in love with, and We have a lovely home, and he's also in recovery, which can bring its funny moments. He's 15 years. I'm thinking, got a long way to go. I do only say that lightly. Really, I am only... Well, I do say it lightly, but sometimes he really pisses me off, and it's like, you know, and I have to laugh, you know. Sometimes he'll also pray. My sponsor says, those who pray together stay together. He'll be kneeling one side of the bed and I'm the other. If he's kneeling too longer than me, I'm thinking, you're just trying to prove something. Do you know what I mean? So I'll kneel a little bit longer, you know. It does have its funny moments, but it has brought, and I don't do any meetings with him. I keep my AA separate from my, that's just the way I do it, you know. You know, and AA has just taught me to love, you know, and be loved, you know, that gratitude is an action. You know, I was always saying I was grateful for this and that, to give my time, you know, like coming out today. I was joking earlier that I said, if it was yesterday, I might have had a resentment because it's sunny and I like the sun and my weekends are really precious. But today, if somebody asks me to do something, I'll do it. I'll do it. You know, and that hasn't always been the same, you know, but I do, and I try and give back. This is about giving back. You know, I've had the privilege of having sponsees. I've changed, I've got an amazing sponsor now. She lives in London. I'll go up and see her. I've done lots of my meetings around London. In fact, I've been privileged that I've been able to travel the world, you know, and it's good for somebody who doesn't like flying. You know, and do meetings in different parts of the world, and that's amazing. You know, I have a handful of really good friends today. When I came into AA, I had thousands. It's taken me 30 years to whittle it down to 6. You know, and I like it that way. You know, life is still difficult sometimes. You know, last year I lost both my parents-in-law within 5 days of each other, which was really sad. What else can I say? It's, I don't know. Well, there's 101 things I wanted to say now that I'm going to forget. But it's been big also for me to be sort of moving around as well and settle down. I now live in Essex. I've had quite a lot of live-in jobs with my work. I kind of left this place that I have in Buckinghamshire because I'd gotten divorced from my husband and the relationship had turned sour after many years with this alcoholic I was living with. And I've learned, you know, also I've had to give myself time as well. You know, relationships for me is one of the most difficult things. And I'm in a healthy relationship now, which is... it's fantastic, actually. All the other relationships I've ever been in have been about control and power. And we've had our teething problems, you know, but I don't like feeling vulnerable. You know, and when you're with an alcoholic, I can feel, you know, because I say things and I'm the one who's actually acting not well. And you know, he'll say something that's really well and... it's just like gut churning, you know, and I've had to get vulnerable, you know, but I have learnt that my vulnerability is my strength, you know, and I've learnt just priceless things, like to walk around the block, you know, shut your mouth and walk around the block, don't, you know, engage brain before mouth, all those simple things, you know, that over the 8 years I've been with him have blossomed into a really lovely relationship, you know, where we're sort of settled and solid, and it's really wonderful, you know. He has a daughter, I have two sons. That can cause problems, you know. But I've another, you know, priceless gem for me is my own business, live and let live. You know, the way he parents his child is maybe not the way I would parent my child, you know, and. There's no right or wrong. I've learned to agree to disagree. What a simple statement, and yet so powerful. You know, in any argument ever or disagreement, I would have to be right. I would have to make you see that I was right. It's so amazing to say, let's just agree to disagree. Fantastic. And not continue something on, you know. You know, the steps, for me, I kind of forgot to say one of the things that I can remember sitting in a meeting at about 7 years sober and looking around. I think it was Jim H. I don't even know if he's around anymore. Is he still around? And I can remember thinking, I liked his sobriety, and I remember sort of thinking and looking at people and thinking, what's different about theirs and mine? I was still living in the drama. I loved the drama. I loved a good death. I loved anything that was drama, you know. And I looked at these people and I remember thinking, the difference is, I begun to learn, was that they'd gone through the steps, you know, and I hadn't. And I couldn't pretend to have done something I hadn't done, because it's not compatible, you know. And for me, going through the steps was frightening, you know, because I was about to learn who I really was, you know, and there were things about me I didn't like, and if you knew those things about me, you wouldn't like me either, you know. And it's just been the most amazing experience, you know. I definitely can or was insane, you know, and I have been restored to some sort of sense of normality or sanity, making amends to people has been amazing, you know. And I've gone through the steps a few times, 3 or 4 even, with different sponsors. That was another thing. I take on a new sponsor, or one died or something, and I think, well, I don't have to do them because I've already done them. That doesn't work either, you know. You get a new sponsor, you go through the steps again, and I like it that way because I can pick up bad habits, you know. So I learned, yeah, as I was saying, I learned that these people who seem to have this peace and serenity about them were really putting in the work, you know, and I learned that I was going to have to change big time. And it's not so scary, you know. It's like that mountain before you is the molehill behind you. And I've learned, you know, I heard a lovely saying recently, you know, that, and for me, my recovery is like, you know, it's a climb, you know, and it's climbing a mountain, and every now and again I'll sit back and I'll think, I made it, you know, and I look at the view and it's amazing, you know, and then I get stale and I have to keep climbing. But I've learnt the fruit grows in the valleys, you know, and that was a really precious saying for me. You know, I've put in the groundwork, I built the foundation, and sometimes it can get a bit rocky, even at 30 years, you know, I threw a kettle at my partner 2 months ago, full of boiling water. You know, I'm not proud of that. You know, I get these moments where I can get really angry, and I behave not well, you know, but I've learnt to apologise today, and all those sorts of just, you know, amazing things, really. So, you know, today I love my life. I have a handful of really good friends. I still do meetings 3 or 4 times a week, you know. I still try to take on commitments, you know, because I don't like to say AA's changed, but, you know, my experience is in a lot of meetings, some people don't seem to want to take on commitments anymore, you know, and it's quite hard sometimes. There's more and more meetings for a start. There's hundreds, you know, there's like 800 or 900 in London alone now, you know, so it's quite difficult, you know, but to keep a commitment going, you know, to work with newcomers, to try and have that daily contact with somebody, to try and just do something for somebody else, you know, on a daily basis. I try and do that today. You know, if somebody had told me sort of 30 years ago, Yvette, what's the key to being happy and having, I don't want to say successful sobriety, but to staying sober, I guess, it would be doing these 12 steps, you know, and living your life on some sort of spiritual basis, and you won't need to drink. I would have thought it was nonsense, you know, but that has proved true for me. You know, I've had periods in recovery when I've been unwell and not happy and full of resentment, and now I don't have those anymore because I keep trying to work those steps in my life. It's like a toolkit that I pick up, you know, and I just love my life today. I love being sober, you know. I every morning I sit in my conservatory and I watch the birds and I think of God as being the great outdoors, you know. And then I'll go on my way to work, you know. I have my responsibilities, life is happening. I've got a friend who's dying from cancer again. I lost a sponsee who died from cancer. People inspire me in the fellowship as well, and they're the people I sort of gravitate to, you know. I remember when my sponsee was dying from cancer, she didn't blurt it out all over the meetings, do you know what I mean? She died in the most dignified way, and it really inspired me. You know, I hear some people, they love to be the harbinger of doom, you know, and like, you know, in all that drama. I think I like people who are more reserved these days, and they're the sort of people I gravitate and want to be, aspire to be like, you know. So I can still be like, I like a bit of drama in my life now and again. You know, I think a lot of alcoholics do, you know, but I'm learning to sort of be more grown up, you know, and to live in the moment. To live in the moment and believe that everything is as it's meant to be. You know, and again, with past experience and my experiences, you know, with years to look back on, I've tried to manipulate lots of situations, and if they had have happened like I had wanted to manipulate them, the wrong thing would have happened. You know, I've tried to sort of keep my finger out of other people's business, you know, and all that, and just let, you know, let whatever's meant to be, you know, and not interfere, you know. And, you know, another thing, what other people think of me isn't my business. I used to want everybody to like me. I am at an age and I think I don't really care if you don't like me. I like me today. You know, I know I'm still a bit mad. I know I'm an alcoholic. I looked at all those tea bags out there and I wanted a nickel. That is an alcoholic. I don't even drink tea. But I thought they're all free. You know, I remember just a funny thing I'll share with you. I remember parking my car in a garage to fill it up with petrol. I filled it up with petrol, I went in to pay, and when I came out, my car had gone. And I thought, where's it gone? Then I saw it. I didn't put the handbrake on. It had rolled down out of the garage and across the road. Now, most normal people would run after it. I didn't. I stood and looked at it, along with everybody else, thinking, I know what they're thinking. They're thinking, silly tart, can't drive. So I was thinking, my car. But I couldn't go and get it. I thought, I have to wait till everybody's gone. And then I went and got my car, and I was so nervous. Then I didn't even look. I drove it 100 yards down the road, parked up, checked. I was like, thank God for that. But I thought, that's not normal. That is not normal behaviour. You know, it's not normal behaviour. So I know I'm here because I'm not all there, but I'm happy that I'm not all there and that I'm here. You know, and still working, because it is a work in progress. I'm coming to 45 minutes, Bernie. I don't know what else I want to share, really. I know, you know, I was laughing about having 10 minutes, and now I've got 45 minutes. I'm thinking, whoop-de-doo, you know. But and there's going to be things that I haven't said that I want to say, but I don't know, you know. I like being an old-timer in a way. I like having all those years, because I have lots of experiences I can look back on. And that's... When I'm talking to people who are going through difficult times, I only have... What I try and do, and this is amazing, try and share my experience, not tell people. I can't tell people what you should and shouldn't be doing. I have no right to do that. And it's amazing, by sharing your experience, how you see other people identify with that. You know, and I love seeing people get well today. For me... That's one of the most amazing things. I see people come in, and I have to admit, sometimes I see people and I think, no chance. You know, I do. And then I see them a few years down the line, I think, wow, this is the most amazing thing ever. Yeah, AA, it rocks. It's just amazing. Yeah, I as I say, I keep my anonymity is precious, you know, and I try and respect others, you know. And if I'm going to break it, it will be me. I want to be the one, you know. But I also have three brothers out there. I lost both my parents to this illness, and I have three brothers that are active. And I hope and pray one day they will find these rooms, you know. I've seen their lives. It's really hard to sit back and watch people's lives fall apart when you know you have the answer. But I can't make other people sober, you know, and I'm just very grateful that I'm sober today and happy, and I have the most amazing life. I have two beautiful children, I have friends, I have my health, I try to look after myself, I practice that self-care, I have God in my life. I don't know what else to say, really. Apart from thank you for asking me. Is that long enough, Bernie?
Yeah, I'll start and nod off. No, I'm joking.
Cheeky.
No, I'm teasing. No, thank you for it. My name's Bernard, I'm an alcoholic. I think the thing about being an alcoholic for me is like, I always remember you, and you never remember me, right?
No.
No, You even done a chair for me when I was secretary at Ungerford about 10 years ago, yeah. You know the Marlow bypass?
Yeah.
From Wickham at the top?
Yeah.
And the M4, the other end,
yes.
Yeah? And you turn left for Marlow, yeah?
Yes.
And then there's that first little roundabout. Was it Lane End or something up there in the top, innit? Where the airport
yes.
is?
Yes, yes,
well, you want to come back down to Marlow now, right? I'm in my truck one day, right? And it's tight, isn't it, the road?
Are you going to say I've cut you up?
No. I'm in my truck. And it's not moving, and there's people coming over, and I'm trying to get through, and it's doing me head. And all of a sudden, I see someone coming down running.
Oh, me.
Right? And I'm looking at someone, like, and I'm saying, God, she's running well. And as you've gone past the front of my windscreen, I forgot I'm in a big truck. I've hit the horn, right? To acknowledge it, and obviously, you're wasting time. You stuck your fingers on you.
Oh no!
No, you didn't. You just ignored me like you did out there, you know.
And I like running.
Yeah, no.
I'm still running.
But the thing, what I was saying was, just seeing you and just talking to you, it took that fixed bayonets out of my head. You with me? I just thought, let it go. You know, whether you get vexed up or not, you will get through here. You with me?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And I did that. But sometimes just getting a glimpse of someone, isn't it? Like driving around the truck, I see people and. It's like I always, your chair to me, I think it's a bit, I always know a bit you're going to say about Marianne.
Yeah.
You know, when she kissed you on the forehead. Because it was like I was in a silent room, and the fella came up to me, Tommy G, and I could see he was frightened of me. And I've never forgotten it. He said, did you pay him all the money for your drinking, son? And I did.
Yeah.
And that was the start of the beginning of